Well, our drama next Sunday is The Stranger's Will by Sarah Hall and Dominic Power. It's a supernatural thriller about obsession, possession and memory, and it's set in an eerie hotel in the Lake District. Drama on 3 at 8:30 next Sunday evening here on BBC Radio 3. Before then, we have a new series of essays this week. They're all called Listener, They Wore It. We've asked 5 writers to examine how clothes and accessories appear in various art forms. The series begins tomorrow night with the writer Julian Barnes considering the role a hat plays. Not any old hat, but a very unforgettable hat that appears in Madame Bovary, the book by Gustave Flaubert. Our essay series, tomorrow night at 10:45 here on BBC Radio 3. But now it's 10 o'clock and time for World Roots. And in the first of 2 programmes, Simon Broughton travels to Egypt to visit the Nile Project, a gathering of musicians from around the region wanting both to share their traditions and explore new fusions.
These steps were cut out of the rock in the time of the pharaohs, around 2,500 years ago. They lead down to a nilometer, used for measuring the height of the River Nile during its annual flood. There are measurements carved in the sides of the wall from pharaonic times, here some from the Turkish period, also in Arabic from the 19th century. It's a clear indication of how important the Nile has been to Egypt throughout its history. I'm in the hot city of Aswan, in the south of Egypt, for 2 World Roots programmes on the Nile Project, bringing together musicians from the whole length of the river. I'm here with Shambu, our Nubian guide, who's also a singer. This song is by a Nubian singer called Sitri Ahmed Salim. He's just been described to be as the Nubian William Shakespeare. It's called The Nile, and it says, "He who drinks the waters of the Nile is always victorious, and we're going to build a dam to conserve its waters." That was the Nubian singer Zizo Taj and friends singing his version of that same song about the river. We're going to be hearing a lot of connections between music and the river. It's the longest river in the world. It's shared by Muslims, by Christians, people of other faiths, as it flows from equatorial Africa all the way to the Mediterranean. We're here at the Fekra Cultural Centre, an idyllic retreat outside Aswan, where the Nile Project is taking place. There are about 20 musicians here representing the 10 countries through which the river runs. They're musicians from Egypt, from North and South Sudan, from Uganda and Ethiopia. In the course of these programmes, we'll hear some of the regional traditions that are feeding into the Nile Project, and at a public concert here in Aswan, we'll hear some of the new music that's coming out of it. With me are the 2 co-founders of the Nile Project. There's Ethiopian-American singer Meklit Hedero and Egyptian ethnomusicologist Mina Girgis. Mina, why does it seem an appropriate time now to be doing something like the Nile Project?
Well, from an Egyptian point of view, the revolution that happened 2 years ago was a really transformative point in the way most of us young Egyptians saw ourselves vis-a-vis the cultures and environments that surround us. And there is a new way, I think, that's emerging, a more holistic way of seeing how Egypt is located in the world and the different relations that we share all around us. And Egyptians have always been looking north and east and west to the Arab world and to the Mediterranean. And many people have not looked south to what Egypt shares with its Nile neighbors, yet it is the most ancient connection that we have. Egypt is the Nile Basin's byproduct. It's the country that's situated in the desert, and without the Nile that comes from, you know, Ethiopia from the south, Egypt would not be the civilization that it has been. So this is an opportunity for us to re-examine these relationships.
MacLeod, for you as a singer, was there a musical inspiration behind the Nile Project?
As a singer, the inspiration for the Nile Project certainly came from music, musical curiosity, and that kind of open door in the way that music allows you to know more about a world. What does the world feel like of a place? I've been singing a song called Abay Mado for a couple of years, and it's a story of a farmer along the Nile, and has been this great experience for me. But the song being about the Nile was a kind of doorway, and many other concerts as well. You know, the project started from going to an Ethiopian music concert in Oakland with Mina and meeting up with him there and having a conversation afterwards. You know, why do we have to go all the way to San Francisco? Why do we have to be in diaspora before we can hear the music of our neighbors? You know, Mina was saying that about Ethiopia, and it's hard to hear Ethiopian music in Uganda, just as it's hard to hear Ugandan music in Ethiopia, yet we share so much. And how can we bring the music of the neighbors to the neighborhood? Abay mado vilao sari allo bere anana gavere. Abay mado vilao sari allo bere anana gavere. Hobe den yale, berwich behalere. Wagan on the gabi, bamere pose.
Ma, ma pina jo edu, inche dule kema.
Meklit Hadero and her song Abaymado from Across the Nile. One of the instruments in that recording, made specially for World Roots, is something that's really typical of the Nile Basin. It's the lyre, the sort of thing plucked by Apollo in Greek mythology, and seen here in Egypt in temple carvings and tomb paintings. There are many sorts of lyre from one end of the Nile to the other. It's got five strings and it's played by Ahmed Said, one of the best players, who's here to show us what it can do. Ahmed Said, you're playing this fantastic instrument, this lyre called Masinkop. It's got a sort of bowl covered in skin and then sticks coming out of it with the strings on it. There's just five strings, one for each finger. The lyre is played all the way up and down the Nile. You're from East Sudan. Can you tell me a little bit about the music from the area?
الآلة دي بالنسبة للبيجا أول هي أقدم آلة المسنكوب ويعتبروا
The Bija people have been around Sudan for around 5,000 years. We are one of the oldest people in the region. So we have been using the masinkop for long time and we use it for both its melodic and rhythmic qualities.
This is Ahmed Said's own composition, a love song about a soulmate, which he went on to perform with the Nile Project's groundbreaking group of instrumentalists in a beautiful sort of Nile blues. Thank you. That was Ahmed Said from Sudan playing the Masenkop. Another sort of Nile lyre is the Simsimia. And with me now is Mohsen El Ashri from Port Said in the north of Egypt. Now, Ahmed Said's instrument had just 5 strings, but Mohsen's Simsimia has got 23. Mohsen, can you tell me about your instrument, which you made yourself, I think?
The Simsimia originally had 5 strings, but then I added 3 more, and then kept adding more and more. I wanted as many strings as required to play all the different maqams or scales of Arabic music, including Sufi songs.
Mohsen, what's been interesting for you about being a part of the Nile Project and collaborating with these other musicians from different parts of the Nile?
What I appreciate the most is getting to know people from all these African countries of which I, as most Egyptians, know little. Of course, knowing the music has been great, and working together on songs has been an interesting challenge. But I hope projects like this send a message to politicians in the region that people want to be together regardless of problems and difficulties.
Now, just to show us what this Simsimia can do, Mohsen's going to play us an improvisation in which he moves through 4 different Arabic modes or maqams. Thank you. One of the striking things about Aswan is simply the way the Nile cuts like a blue ribbon through the rocky yellow desert on either side. It's clear what a lifeline it is. This is Simon Broughton in Egypt for Radio 3's World Roots on the Nile project. And if you imagine the Nile, you probably think of Egypt and a felucca, the sort of sailing boat I'm in now with its triangular fin-like sail. But Egypt is only the last part of the Nile's journey. Upstream, there are two Niles. The Blue Nile, which starts in Ethiopia and provides more than 80% of the water that arrives here in Aswan. And the White Nile, which begins south of the equator in Burundi, flows into Lake Victoria and winds through seven countries before joining the Blue Nile in Khartoum, North Sudan. This shared resource can create both a connection and a conflict. We're here in the Ferial Gardens in Aswan, which is on a rocky bank with a fantastic view overlooking the river. And I'm here with Will Reynolds, who spent the last couple of years travelling down the Nile and working on a book. Will, now 2 years after the Egyptian Revolution, why do you think it's an important time to be looking at the Nile?
Well, Egypt is fundamentally lucky. Out of the entire African continent, you might think of it as being one of the states that is most water rich, even though it falls at the very end of the river. For the time being, the status quo is that enough of the water continues to make it all the way down this way that people really don't have to worry about it. Frankly, it's a part of life that's so fundamental that everybody takes it for granted. From that perspective, really what we've got here is water wealth that is in some ways unrivaled. And as we move forward, I think that in a world of increasingly strained resources, that perception is going to change. People are going to have to stop taking this water for granted and start realizing that in this increasingly crowded world and in an increasingly crowded country, there is only so much to go around.
And what sort of dialogue, what are the issues that are going on between Egypt, where we are now, and then the countries upstream from which Egypt inherits the water?
Well, in recent years, there have been a number of efforts to increase that dialogue on perhaps an official level. But I guess right now, certainly the lesson in Egypt in the last 2 years since the revolution has been that kind of dialogue at an official level doesn't always work to meet people's needs.
Because there's been tension between Egypt and Ethiopia, because Ethiopia is wanting to build dams up the river, which is obviously going to impact on the water getting to Egypt. What are the issues behind that?
Well, again, I would say that every nation in the watershed is looking forward to a 21st century of unrivaled development, a time when everybody hopes there will be more prosperity, a chance for greater use of these resources to lead to a better life for all people. But there is some amount of fear here in Egypt that if dams go online upstream or if water resource use changes in Ethiopia or in the Sudan, that this will be a moment where suddenly Egyptians will find that as they turn on their motor to suck water out of the river and irrigate their fields, that the irrigation canals run dry.
There is a sense when you listen to Egyptians talking about the Nile that they somehow feel they have an ownership of it. Maybe one could call it a cultural supremacy over the Nile, but the Nile does belong to many other countries. How much awareness is there between Egypt and the other countries upstream that there needs to be a dialogue over the resources?
You know, unfortunately, I would say that awareness is very dim. Amongst most people here on the banks of the Egyptian Nile. And there's several reasons for that. One is that many people living here are living a life where they're often born in one small place and they live out most of their days in that same place and maybe even die in the same house where they were born. So they don't know very much about what's going on upstream or downstream, even in the context of their own country or their own governorate here in Egypt. So those questions of broad perspective over the total flow of the river, there are precious few individuals who really see that. Now, we've had a chance over the last year or so to spend more and more time with barge captains here in Egypt, people who, out of all of the population, all of the 85 million, are the ones who travel the river the most. And yet still, even amongst these people whose very livelihoods is connected to the river in a fundamental way, that vision of what lies beyond the Egyptian shores of the Nile has been tremendously disrupted. And that's something that happened at the very day that the high dam went in. Prior to that, the low dam here in Aswan had a series of locks that made it navigable. So that these traders, these people who kept the idea that the river was linked to other countries, not so long ago, a generation ago, individuals who live here in Aswan traded up in Wadi Halfa in the Sudan. And that connection was very much a living connection and something that everybody experienced on a daily basis. Now, following that rupture, we're in a time where the artificial boundaries or the national lines that have been drawn between countries in the Nile River Basin states have become increasingly firm, and it's become increasingly difficult for people to look beyond those boundaries. So, you know, the hope is that now that here we are a generation later, when those links have been torn asunder in some way, that there's a way to reestablish those links. And it's really going to take, beyond sort of high-level negotiation, it's going to really take lived experience on the part of individuals making connections between people who live on the banks of this wonderful river here in Egypt and those upstream.
Will Reynolds, thank you very much, and good luck with the book. It's those international collaborations along the river that are the innovative part of the Nile Project, which is what we've come to see for this World Roots program. As part of the creative process of the Nile Project, we're here at a session where the performers are trying out their repertoire. This is Al Sara from Sudan, singing a traditional song from the women's repertoire called I Am the Bride of the Nile.
Hi, my name is Al Sara, and I am a Sudanese-born singer and songwriter. I live and I am based in Brooklyn, New York. I joined the Nile Project to represent the Central Sudanese culture, as well as partly, you know, Nubian culture, but predominantly what happens to that when it grows up in the diaspora and comes home. I'm interested in how things become Sudanese traditionally. Because being Sudanese, it's really a fusion culture, if you think of it, especially Central Sudan and in Khartoum. It's where all the tribes meet. So the fusion culture that grows there is really what interests me personally, especially because it's very traditional still. And how can something be fusion and traditional at the same time? That's where my interest comes from.
It's a new band, a new orchestra you're creating, and also new repertoire.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Tell me about the other piece that you're performing.
The other piece is a piece I actually wrote about a year ago, and I never really performed it. I actually only did like a recording of it, and we put it online, very, very small thing, but, you know, never really touched it again. And then the words and the melody really spoke to me when I came here. And it spoke to me first when I was listening to Mohsin play the tambour. And I was like, oh, my God. That just sounds so good. It would be so beautiful to do it with this song. So I started singing the song, and I just changed the chorus slightly so that it, for me, it made more sense here.
Can you talk about the words a little bit of the song, or what the idea of the song is?
The idea of the song is like a greeting song. In Nubian traditions and in Sudanese traditions, there's a lot of songs that are for particular occasions, you know? Greeting songs, wedding songs, you know, songs you sing at funerals. There's always an occasion for every type of song. So I wanted to write a song that, a greeting song, something to welcome people with. And the lyrics about it are just, you know, kind of a, it's a praise song, and it's like, you know, have you seen our loved one? They're saying hello, they're sending their greetings, why don't you greet them back, you know? Gulu salam means say peace, or say the greetings, as salam, peace. So the people of the Nile have gathered, send your greetings, they're sending their greetings back.
So in a way, it's a song that's quite representative of this project, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yeah, I felt like it was very representative of it, so... That's why I wanted to do it with this orchestration especially, because I've never performed it. So I feel like it's being done for the first time, really, now.
Can you just take me through the instruments that you're working with on this song?
Of course, yeah. We have Ahmed Umar playing electric bass. He's from Egypt. On strings section, we have Hazem from Cairo. We have Alfred from Cairo on the violin. And we have Michael from Uganda playing his little tuba fiddle that he calls it. And we also, on percussion, we're going to have Asrat playing the kabaro from Ethiopia. We have...
So drums.
Yeah, the drums. Kabaro is a little Ethiopian traditional drum set. It's got two big drums and two little drums. I feel like it's one of the original drum sets, you know? And it has a stand and holds it together. So he's going to be playing that. We have Hani Shakir, also based in Egypt. He's going to be playing Rick and Cajon. He's a really brilliant percussionist. And we have Lawrence, also from Uganda, on the xylophone. And then, of course, we have Jorga on the saxophone from Ethiopia. And we will have all the ladies singing with us from different places. So we're hoping to get all that mixing in there happening.
What do you think comes out of this collaborative process? What do the other musicians get out of working together like this?
I think a lot of us get to see the similarities in our music, really. I think it's one of the most important things for me, because, you know, we can all hear differences quite easily about what's different between our music, but...
The tunings,
the shapes of the instruments, of course, these are all things we pick out, especially as musicians, immediately. But what's really part of the learning process and the learning curve as we're learning each other's music is learning how similar they are, learning the similarities and where we can really fit into it. And what I'm hoping and what I'm seeing happening is that, you know, we came in as just separate musicians who play our own things, and we're really, you know, creating a band. We're like a little orchestra now. And so what I'm seeing happening naturally and organically is a new sound that we're creating that's hopefully just the Nile sound, not just one place or one thing. الحبايب قالوا السلام قالوا السلام ردوا السلام أصل حضارة طيبة وإيمان قولوا السلام
I'm here with Lawrence Okello and Michael Bazibu, who are the two Ugandan members of the Nile Project. We're sitting here underneath the mango tree to give us some shade. And to me, there's nothing more indicative of the fact that the Nile starts in Central Africa than the instruments surrounding us, these huge drums, two different sorts of drums, harps, xylophone, many things. Amazing instruments. Just before you started playing, you said, "I really feel at home, Lawrence." Mm-hmm. Why did you say that?
No, the ambience. Here it's the first time. Egypt is all stones. I've been seeing stones and this dry ground around, but here I can see the mango tree. I see kind of bush. I see green.
We're so underneath the mango tree.
It's because of the green. Yeah, And then the wind is flowing, and I hear some little birds. It's a feel that you're at home. Uganda is very green. So this green really takes me back home. I know you're sitting under that mango tree and maybe playing your music with friends and, the community.
The piece with the xylophone and the drums, yeah. What's that music for? This is your demonstration of Ugandan ingredient in exactly. The Nile Project. Yes. What is that music?
The music is actually a court music. Basically from the Buganda Kingdom. Buganda Kingdom found in the central part of Uganda. We played you a court music from the palace. the music that used to be played in the palace long, long, long time ago. Played for the king and, of course, the royals. And we used a very specific instruments, the xylophone, the amadinda in the Luganda language, and then the big drums, a set of drums. Yeah, but this music, we have tried to keep it. We have kept it very well. Our Thrundere troupe is a troupe called Ndere troupe, very big, and it has tried to, you know, consolidate and bring up the music, like not allow it to die.
We're in a Nubian village just down the river from the city of Aswan. It's like amazing countryside, the river on one side, the desert on the other, and between this narrow strip with palm trees and green, green grass. Plenty of water, and why? Because it comes up from the river. I love the simple, practical technology of irrigation. The ancient Egyptians used the shadouf, a sort of bucket and seesaw that you can still see around today. But the Romans introduced the water wheel over 2,000 years ago. And that's what we've got here, a cow turning a metal wheel, which means you can raise a lot of water up to a higher level very quickly. This cow's been working for about 5 minutes, and we've already got a steady stream of water into the irrigation channel. And of course, music is always connected with these everyday things of life.
In dunya me amakinu me la 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 weri godo bakhti kinu me la 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 la.
The song's being performed by our guides here, that's Shambu and Mohammed. Mohammed, can you tell me what this song is saying?
The song shows us the importance of water wheel. In the life there are two kinds of people. The lucky people, who the water wheel runs and brings water. The unlucky people, the water wheel runs, the cow turns, and lifting no water. So the song says that life itself it looks like water wheel.
La 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 la. Kole na widu reka tembe shesudira kujne. Weri godongo tinam bakhti kuluga togne.
We've been listening to a Nubian song inspired by a water wheel, the centuries, thousands of years old irrigation method in the area. Now, I'm here again talking to Mina Girgis, one of the organizers of the Nile Project. And I think what's important to you is this is not just about music. This is not just a meeting of musicians, although that's what this World Roots program is really focusing on. But it's more than that, and you had a meeting before this musical residency with many experts in many different fields to talk about the issues surrounding the Nile. What's the purpose behind that, and what came out of it?
Well, you know, the story is when I came up with the idea of the Nile Project and shared it with Mekleet, we were mainly interested in the music dialogue. This is what we do, this is what we're interested in. And we realized that this musical dialogue has a lot of other values beyond the music. And we found that this environmental, social, historical context that we're a part of can really help ground the musical conversation, can really give a sense of time and place to these musicians that are part of the Nile Project, to understand their role beyond their music. And we had 35 participants from 13 different countries that work in civil society organizations, nonprofits, and for-profits as well. And they came from very different sectors to share their perspectives of the Nile, the challenges that they see we share. The river has many values to these different populations, for its energy, for its water, for many of its aesthetic qualities that bring so many people for tourism purposes, for example. And the issues that I see are, how do we work together to complement our needs that are basic human challenges? You know, I mean, we're talking about lack of resources, lack of water, lack of energy, developing countries, there are health issues, there's poverty, there's economic development. So it really comes down to basic developing needs. There is a sense of whose Nile it is, who gets the chance to decide on the course of the river. And there are many discourses that are not really helpful in fostering this sense of sharing this river. And you speak with any of the politicians that have been involved with many of these negotiations, and they'll tell you it's exasperating. It's too complicated to solve that way. So we're trying a new way. We're trying music. And surprisingly enough, they think we stand a chance. So it's great to hear that from politicians as well.
A lovely moment of stillness as Ahmed Said, the singer and lyre player from Sudan, performs for the first time with Mohamed Fouda, one of the Egyptian masters of the Ney flute. To finish this first of two programs, we return to co-founder Meklit Hedero. Her song in the closing concert features the band put together specially for the Nile Project.
There's a quiet between us, it all stretches for miles. Talk to me, oh, I miss your pose, your language. I want to sit at your kitchen table when you cook and make all those good things with your hands.
What's been interesting for you about the collaborations and the meetings that have taken place musically? What's inspired you, and what do you feel has inspired other people?
Well, I think at its most basic, the inspiration comes from encounter. In a way, I call it the poetry of encounter, this kind of listening that happens, that has to happen in order for musicians to collaborate, because many of us don't speak the same language, but we do have a language, and this musical language that we're able to communicate with is not hard, it's soft, it's not linear, it's circular. And so there's a lot of space for people to be themselves. And when people can be themselves, the kind of opening that happens, it's just been all love. Like, there's so much kindness. It's like listening with kindness. And that deep appreciation of somebody being fully themselves while fully inside their traditions, this is very special. But, you know, also just to note, this is our pilot. This is our version number one. And this is a project that will go on for many years, because how can you really represent the true diversity, the true nature of the music of the Nile Basin in just one residency with just one project? We think of the Nile Project as a platform, so that we may have a hip-hop band that comes out of the Nile Project next year, or it could be something far more experimental, working with experimental musicians at another time. But it's really a platform for collaboration rather than a band itself, so it will go on and needs to in order to fulfill the vision.
Was the singer Meklit Hedero, recorded in a public concert in Aswan in Egypt, bringing to an end the first of two World Roots programmes exploring the Nile Project, an experimental gathering of musicians from the region. The presenter was Simon Broughton and the producer was Juan Carlos Jaramillo. And incidentally, it's perhaps worth noting that Meklit Herero is going to appear at the South Bank Centre in London on the 8th of March. It's all part of the Women of the World Festival. Well, tomorrow night at this time on Radio 3, you can hear Jez Nelson introducing a solo session by the pianist Andrew Hill from 2000 and a performance by John Chikai and his fellow free jazzer Evan Parker, recorded during a rare UK appearance in 2005. Jazz on 3 tomorrow night at 11. And the following day...
She performed it in Istanbul, now she brings it to London. On BBC Radio 3, the culmination of a European tour, Janine Jansen performs Mozart's Turkish Violin Concerto No. 5 in Radio 3, live in concert. Alongside it, more Mozart, the Concerto No. 2, and Mozart's very first symphony. Radio 3, live in concert from London's Cadogan Hall, Tuesday night at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. The time now is 11 o'clock, time for Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
Hello. In this week's programme, I pay tribute to one of the most inspiring and enduring of musicians from an abundant era that brought jazz to the masses, elevated the music and shaped perceptions. He is Dave Brubeck, who died on the 5th of December last year. We bring you a concert that Jazz Lineup recorded at the Bridgewater Hall in Manchester in 2003. But let's open with the maestro solo. This is from the CD Private Brubeck Remembers. It's a double CD with CD 1 solo piano and CD 2 an interview in conversation with American broadcast legend Walter Cronkite. This is Dave Brubeck playing It's a Sin to Tell a Lie.